My guest in the studio tonight is a pianist and composer who moved to Sydney from New Zealand in 2009 to continue his tertiary study at the Sydney Conservatorium of Music, where he graduated with first class honours in 2011. He's the recipient of numerous awards, including the 2013 Bell Award for Young Jazz Artist of the Year and runner-up in the 2013 National Jazz Awards. He's worked with many prominent Australasian and international artists and is in high demand as a sideman. He's about to release his second album as a leader. Steve Barry, welcome back to Now's the Time.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here.
We last chatted in early, I think it was January 2013 on this program. And before we get into talking about the new album, can I ask you just to, for our listeners' sake, maybe recap on your musical background? You're from New Zealand,
sure.
As I mentioned.
Yep.
How you came to the piano and who your early influences were?
Yeah, sure. It's a funny story, actually. I started playing the piano when I was 4 or 5, and I was a terrible student. I really didn't very much enjoy it. When I was about 10 or 11, the Associated Board of the Royal Schools of Music in the UK bought out this jazz piano syllabus. And up until that point, I'd kind of been doing sort of quasi-classical music, and something wasn't quite resonating with me, and my teacher kind of threw me this syllabus as a last attempt to sort of get me into music, and it worked. I discovered jazz, and I realized that I didn't just have to read the notes on the page, that I could sort of create my own music, and I could take a certain amount of creative license with, you know, what was written. So I was hooked, and I started a trio with a couple of high school mates when I was about 14, and we sort of had this regular gig down near in a cafe near the beach in Auckland, and we'd play there on a Saturday and a Sunday afternoon for 3 hours a day for tips and $30 each or something, and we were just loving it. We'd try and, you know, we'd just listen to Miles Davis records and try and copy what was happening, and yeah. And then I sort of started my degree at Auckland University and then moved to Sydney to finish off my degree.
You performed with Roger Mannins as well, didn't you?
Yeah. We started, funnily enough, we used to go and have lessons with Roger as a trio when we were 15 or 16, and we'd trek out to his place out west in West Auckland and have a jam session. And he was kind of my major mentor as a kid. And I think we still play a lot today, and we're actually playing at the Queenstown Jazz Festival coming up in a few weeks' time. So yeah, my oldest musical comrade, I think.
I know we mentioned this last time we chatted, but just the sheer number of highly talented piano players coming from New Zealand.
Yeah.
The mind boggles, really. What is it about New Zealand?
I couldn't tell you. Maybe it's in the water.
And so as far as overarching influences is concerned.
Sure, yeah. I started with Bobby Timmons, probably. And then Oscar Peterson, quickly on to Keith Jarrett, Herbie Hancock, Bill Evans, McCoy Tyner, and then on to people, sort of more modern people, people like Brad Meldow and Aaron Parks and those sort of guys. And more recently, well, in the last few years, yeah, heavily influenced by a lot of 20th century classical music, so people like Bartok and Stravinsky, and also going all the way back to people like Bach and Mozart and the way they used
the classics.
Yeah, totally. It's hard to go past them, really.
Since we last spoke, of course, as I mentioned at the top, you won the 2013 Bell Award for the Young Jazz Artist of the Year. How important is an award like this to you, and are there tangible changes for your career as a professional artist?
I think so. I think awards like that are I was overwhelmed to receive that award, and I think those things are really important for raising awareness and raising the profile of musicians, because admittedly there's not a whole lot of things that do. There's the major festivals, but otherwise I think the scene needs these sort of focus points that bring the community together, and I think that's one of the really important ways of doing that. Yeah.
And you see your own career, you see a great benefit from that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially given that the Bell Awards are kind of run out of Melbourne, where I don't have too much of a profile. Yeah, I think it's been a really a vital part in what I've been able to do with music in the past few years. Yeah.
Before we get on to the new release, which I've got in my hot hand, which we've just heard, Paradox of Choice.
Sure.
Earlier this year, you spent some time in Japan near Mount Fuji. I was reading on your website today. You were over there with Dave Jackson,
yes,
the alto player,
indeed,
who appears on this new album.
He does.
But you were with Japanese artist Yoshio Suzuki, former member of Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers, the bass player, and Ko Omura, the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell us about the background to how this collaboration came about, and how did it play out? You ended up recording, didn't you?
We did, actually, yeah. Well, a couple of years ago, I kind of made a spontaneous decision that I was going to go to Japan for a week, and there were some cheap flights going, so I just booked them in, and I said, hey, why not? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? I'll hook up with some guys over there, even if, you know, if I can't play any music, then I'll have a great time. And I sort of knew Ko through the scene. We'd done a few things in Sydney before, and in the end, we managed to hook up 4 or 5 gigs in that week. And I had an amazing time. I mean, Japan is just an incredible place. It's just, the culture really resonates quite strongly with me, I feel. And, there's a really strong passion for the music amongst Japanese people. And there are so many jazz clubs in Tokyo, it's kind of ridiculous. So that happened a couple of years ago, and Ko and I had been keeping in touch since then. And we were trying to figure out another time where we could get together and do something. And Dave and I had started doing a lot of playing in sort of the start of 2012 with another band called Tiny Hearts, which is kind of a collaboration we've been doing some stuff with. Yeah, we sort of just decided that we were going to do it again. We applied for a international touring grant, which didn't come through, but we'd already booked the flights. So, yeah, so we
do
just...
Do it anyway.
Yeah, that's it. So we went over and we played a couple of gigs, and then we did this amazing recording session in this recording studio kind of nestled in the woods near the base of Mount Fuji. And we were there at the end of April, the start of May. So we were sort of getting the last of the cherry blossom season.
Right.
And it was just magical, this scenery and just kind of the serenity of the place. You know, literally the studio is just in the middle of the woods. But it's a totally kitted out legitimate recording studio and does a lot of business, probably for that very reason. Yeah, so we did 2 days in the studio. We stayed at the studio. Yeah, on the last day we were in Japan, we went up to the top of Mount Fuji and had probably the most delicious curry that I've ever eaten in about 4 degrees in the howling wind and the snow. And it was just
that
a really...
warmed you up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was amazing, actually, because there was a girl standing outside, and there's no one around. It's the middle of nearly the middle of winter, and the place is deserted. And there's a girl, she must have been mid-20s, she was just standing outside with, you know, with the menu, and, you know, irasamase, and trying to get people to come into the shop, and there's just no one there. So we have, okay, well, let's go. We can't just leave this girl standing out here in the cold. So we went in and had this curry, and yeah, it was just incredible, amazing, amazing experience. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like ideal conditions to get the artistic juices flowing.
Definitely.
The stimulus for this brand new recording, which is called Puzzles, by the way, was the prize that you received the National Jazz Awards. I think you were runner-up there at Wangaratta last year, and that was a donated studio session at Nico Schwebler, his studios in Melbourne.
Mm. I mean, every tune needs a name. It sort of doesn't really matter if it's a really bad one. but, you know, I was just sort of doing some playing in the morning before a rehearsal one day, and I sort of was just hastily writing out this tune and scribbled it out on a piece of manuscript and gave it to the guys in the rehearsal, and someone commented that they thought it looked like Japanese characters because it was so badly done. So thus titling the tune.
Yep. I thought I'd just remind listeners who else is in the trio. Alex Bonham on the bass, Tim Firth on the drums. Your bass player has left you and has gone to LA, but it's exciting for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an incredible opportunity, yeah.
He's, just inform our listeners, he's going to the Thelonious Monk Institute, is it?
Yeah, that's the one. Mm. Yep, which is a 2-year master's program based in LA. Basically, they take one So it's a master's program. They take one ensemble worth of musicians every year, or every 2 years. Yeah, they work together as a band for that amount of time and come out of it with a master's. And the artists are all put up in apartments in LA. They're given a monthly allowance, and it's probably one of the most prestigious institutions or places to study jazz in the world, I'd
Wow.
say. So yeah, it's amazing.
That's going to open up a whole lot of
That's
opportunities.
for sure. Yep.
Look, I'm sure he'll still speak to us when he gets
Well,
back.
I
It might even open up opportunities for others to go over
Yeah,
and
well,
check out what he's doing.
hopefully we can just feed off him a little bit. That'd be great.
What is it, though, about Alex? I mean, you've chosen him, and a lot of other leaders in Sydney have chosen him as a bass player. What is it about his playing that attracted you?
Well, I mean, Alex and I have been playing together for a while now. I was thinking about this the other day, because I moved to Sydney in 2009, and we started playing pretty soon after that. So we've got a long history. But I think one of the things that really connects us is Alex sort of has this infectious enthusiasm and excitement for learning and for playing music. And yeah, it really helps to drive the music and the hang forward. So
Yeah. So he's inspirational to be around, I guess, to a certain
absolutely.
degree. Just off topic for a moment, I read recently, and I can't remember where it was, but the younger age groups now, they don't listen to complete albums anymore, and they probably haven't for a while. But they tend not even to listen to a full song before skipping to the next one these days. The article mentioned, I think, from memory. They'll skip to the next song within 10 seconds.
Was this a Branford Marcellus article by any chance? Is that right?
I don't think
Right,
so.
okay, I was reading something
A
that he'd written the other
similar
day.
was it? Right, okay. So I guess it's quite a radical reduction in our attention span. So does this have implications for jazz and improvised music? And if so, what needs to change?
Wow, that's a big question. It's hard to know. If I get a new record, then I have to say I'm not one of those people. I always want to hear something all the way through. And I think one of the, I mean, hey, probably the biggest part of my learning and my practice is just listening. I think I spend far more time listening really intensively and closely to records than I do actually playing the instrument. I don't think that's, yeah, I think that would be a fair thing to say. Yeah, I'm not sure what needs to change. I think there's a difference between hearing music on a CD and experiencing a gig live. I think they're two vastly different things. For one reason, mostly because live performances are generally always more engaging and what's the word? Probably better for the musicians than doing a studio performance. And it's very hard in the studio because you're playing stale a lot of the time. It's hard to generate the excitement and the
Enthusiasm.
vibe that you get from playing on a live stage.
So it's more fulfilling for the artist to have a live audience.
For
You
sure.
feed off that energy.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's a certain, when you're at a gig, you can't do anything else. You're there to sit down and to sit and appreciate, as a friend of mine says. Which is a daunting thing, I think. I think just to busy yourself, especially in today's world where we're doing so many things at once, to sit down and say, no, I'm just gonna be here. I'm just gonna be in this moment and listen to this music and just completely get into flow with it and not do anything else. I think that can be a confronting thing. I think
When I
that's a big
read
step.
the article, I thought, well, this is really just another reflection on say, for example, how media is these days and how people treat the media. They skim from one article or one issue to the next without really delving into it in any depth.
Absolutely. And I think that's I think that's something that we have to grapple with as musicians is how do we really reach and connect with people in a way that's meaningful and ultimately has longevity? How do we build these personal relationships with people so that they keep coming back to your
That's
gigs?
right. You've got to try and hang on to them.
That's it.
It's a big challenge. Tell us a little bit about Flux.
Well, it's kind of something I'm not very good at is naming tunes, but this one is kind of entitled because of the melody, there's a sort of a initial melodic idea that kind of appears in a few different forms and variations throughout the tune. And the tune itself kind of consists of a few different sections. So the melody always appears in a different place with kind of a different sort of context. So that's the title.
Steve, thanks very much for joining us in the
studio.
Yeah,
thanks, Frank. It's been
great.
A
pleasure as usual.